With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
709 and change. Mike Max, Ron Shira.
You were just reading it backwards, buddy.
I was close, but I couldn't quite see. There's a little glare there.
It's too bad this isn't television. You know that?
I know.
Because folks could see you and I holding hands before the show starts.
As we did the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah. You know, boy, the world is alive with that chit-chat, isn't it?
Oh, boy. My gosh. There's a
Are you going to get into that when you're talking the jockstrap stuff here?
Yeah. You know, I just had Xavier Rhodes on and talked a little bit about it. But and Renee Montgomery was also on the first half hour talking about her take on it from the Minnesota Lynx standpoint. But it's... You know, I said this before. I talked to a lot of players about it over the last couple of days. And my take is there's a few players that are incredibly moved one way or the other. And in the middle, or most of them, where they're going, really? Do I got to be involved in this? You know, tell me what you want me to do, coach. And if you want me to link arms, I'll link arms. I just want to play, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's where the vast majority fall.
I think so, too. But I tell you, there's a lot of people upset over it, perhaps both ways.
I guess both ways, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it once. I just don't see what's wrong about being upset that people don't salute the flag. I think you should salute the flag during the national anthem. I don't think that's...
I do, too. And what they're protesting has nothing to do with the flag or the national anthem. So, you know, some of it's anti-Trump. You know, I think if Trump had said, I want everybody to kneel.
Guess what? They'd all stand, right?
Exactly. So, I'm just glad, you know, we don't play the Star Spangled Banner before the fishing opener. So, we miss all this stuff.
I do it on my duck call once in a while before the opener.
Yeah. Well, I've done that. Yeah. Well, I played Yankee Doodle on the duck call one time. It was so slow. Speaking of duck openers, out there, I'm sure.
I was not because I had to work. And coach.
You're not working at 6 in the morning, buddy.
No, but I had basketball tryouts and
long
this
story.
And that.
You're
and
trying to kids, make a team
yeah,
again,
Yeah, trying
right?
to make the team again, the
okay.
travel team.
Yeah.
But that had to be one of the warmest openers.
Yeah, I do remember one that was hotter.
I remember one that was incredibly hot.
Yeah, 90-some degrees. That was back in my Star Tribune days. I remember writing about the fact that instead of in camo, we should have been in a swimming suit.
I remember it might have been the same one we're talking about. I remember shooting one duck that day and being in short sleeves.
Well, I didn't hear much as I was telling you off the air. I was roaming a river Saturday morning and fishing. And only heard one volley of shotguns go off as mid-morning, and I'm pretty sure... They were shooting geese, and as I shared with you, I did not see one duck on the river.
Yeah.
Now,
that's not the telltale, but usually you see something, right?
Well, yeah, usually jump a couple. You come around a corner, you know, you jump them. But then I wasn't in the backwater slough type because I was fishing bass. It was kind of, you know, in the current areas. From what I hear, and you showed a picture.
Yeah, my brother had good luck with wood ducks.
Yeah, and we haven't had that cold weather that typically sends woodies and teal
yep.
heading south. So there should have been some of those birds around. Now, Mr. Anderson of the Star Tribune, he had, I think, one duck they shot.
Whoa.
Yeah.
He should have pretty good connections by now.
Well, they keep going to the same spot. I think,
maybe that's the problem.
Well, there is some problem. I think he does that to be consistent from one standpoint so that if the duck hunting's good, it might reflect on what's out there. If the duck hunting's bad.
If you go to the same place, it's a barometer.
Right. It's a nice barometer, and he's of the ilk as I that we don't have near the ducks we had before. But, you know, later on we're going to talk to Steve Quartz, DNR duck guy, and kind of get an update from him. He's always pretty optimistic,
sure.
but we'll see what he says.
But let me ask you this, because one of the reasons I don't go on the opener is I don't have time to scout, and I don't want to go out in the dark the first time out at a place. You know, it used to be a noon opener. And
right.
I was talking last week, the noon whistle used to tell us when to go, because we got the old noon whistle back where I grew up. And, you know, if you heard somebody shoot before the noon whistle, you knew that they were in violation. You know?
Right.
I would never do that, of course.
You wouldn't know. Unless they weren't flying.
Unless they weren't. Unless I didn't think they were going to come back again. But my point being, I enjoyed that noon opener, and that even at 9 a.m. I can handle, because I think that's a good safe way to do it on the opener, because people can then see where they're going, as opposed to the dark. You know, many times you know, no matter, you know, you're going to a spot that you're familiar with, but it's nice to be able to do it in the light. And I don't understand what the upside is, because the duck activity is about the same on the opener, no matter when you start it. So why not start it when it's light?
Well, the noon opener really was not for safety purposes. Mm-hmm. It was set as Minnesota's way of not shooting a bunch of opening day ducks that hadn't been wised up yet.
Okay.
So by noon starting, most of the natural morning flight was over.
Yeah. Yep.
So they felt that that was saving some ducks if they didn't start shooting till noon.
Then they went to 9.
And then they went to 9 because there was, you know, everybody else in the Mississippi Flyway is whacking them whenever they can.
Yeah, I get that.
So a lot of Minnesota guys said, hey, you know, what are we, the only hunters in the flyway that have to be conservationists here?
Yep.
Give us a break. So it went to 9, and of course later it's different. And now the duck season opens about a week before it ever used to.
Yeah.
It used to be the first Saturday in October.
And that's all based on biological studies, or what is it?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know either.
I don't have much.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is you'd have more teal to hunt early in the year. That would be the big difference, right?
Yeah, when the Fish and Wildlife Service says we have a record number of mallards in America, I go, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You can't drain as much as we did and do everything we did and still say we have that many ducks, and as a lot of duck hunters will say, oh, if we have that many, where in the heck are they? So there you go.
Yeah, I've asked that question many times. And why do they fly so darn fast?
True enough.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back and talk duck hunting with Steve Kors. Stay with us. It's Live Outdoors, WCCO. Ladies and gentlemen, this song is dedicated to Mike Max.
Why? A duck conservationist. He can't hit the broadside of a barn.
All right, cut the music, okay? Steve Kors, can you help me out here?
I can try.
Hey, good evening, Steve.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
Hey, listen, well, you opened the big duck season. What's your initial feedback that you're hearing around the state?
Well, we're predicting a pretty good opener, and at least everything I've heard so far, it seemed to be the case. Heard a lot of very good reports statewide. I'll hear some more over the next couple of days, but generally very positive opening weekend.
Mostly woodies and teal or mallards,
for
or what
the most
was?
Part, yeah, you know, we run a bunch of bag checks across the state, and you know, some of the areas, Thief Lake, WMA had, I think, their best opener ever. Averaged, I think, 3.5 or more ducks a hunter. That was mostly ringnecks. Rosso by the border, Canadian border, had a very good opener. More teal, a few mallards. Pelican Lake had a fantastic opener. Mostly teal, but they average probably over 4 ducks a hunter there.
Which Pelican Lake was that, Steve?
Down by Sauk Rapids. I think they said 150 vehicles at the accesses, plus all the public accesses. And I don't know, I mean, it seems like a lot of hunters, but I don't know if that's how that compares to historic numbers. But a very good opener there. Carlos Avery had a fantastic opener down North Metro. I think they average about 2.5 ducks a hunter, teal and wood ducks. And, you know, typically there it's about a duck a hunter. So they had water was down. They had very good wild rice this year. And some of the reports out in western Minnesota, out Appleton area out that way, a very heavy to teal, generally pretty good opener. So for the most part, you know, it's kind of as predicted, teal, wood ducks, and some mallards. So
I have to say that surprises me initially because of the weather, the warm weather.
Yeah, that, you know, at least leading up to the opener, there was kind of some hesitancy. You know, we had a news release that went out, I think, Monday that said good opener, and some were kind of questioning that based on the, it was extremely warm in the southern part of the state, very rainy up northern part of the state, but I think it probably impacted hunter effort a little bit, but as far as success, you know, it's one of the better openers I've seen as far as, you know, ducks per hunter. Maybe people didn't hunt quite as long because of the rain and maybe the heat, but again, that's a very positive opener as far as the number of ducks in the bag. And I also think hunter effort, at least from car counts and things, were probably down, but I won't know till middle part of this week what duck stamp sales were, you know, compared to previous years, but likely they haven't gone up any.
Yeah, in the earlier, Ron and I were just talking about starting at September 23rd or 4th instead of October 1st. What's been the impact of that over the last couple of years?
We've certainly shot more ducks. The earlier we open her, our annual harvest has been higher. Most of that is driven by both blue and teal and wood ducks, and both those species, the earlier we open her, harvest goes up, harvest per hunter goes up. Probably for some of the other species like mallards, it's probably kind of a wash. You know, mallard harvest doesn't change as much. We do probably shoot a few more with the early opener over the course of the season, but mallards and ringnecks is probably more of a wash, but wood ducks and blue and teal are second, third most abundant duck in the bag. So, you know, overall, that earlier opener, it's been positive. Both those species, based on, you know, population status, especially continentally and band recoveries, certainly can sustain, you know, slightly higher harvest pressure. Harvest rates on both of those are generally fairly low.
Well, Steve, we've been pounding the geese now for a couple weeks or so. Any updates on the Canada goose hunting success?
Yeah, generally somewhat favorable on the opener for goose reports. You know, I think a lot of folks kind of target ducks and, you know, maybe shoot geese as a bonus. But I do know some areas, folks were probably trying to field hunt for geese and maybe impacted by some of the water. You know, we've got a fair amount of sheet water in places with some of the rains we had. Maybe they had to go to Plan B and, you know, change where they were hunting. But, you know, the guys that were out field hunting, I think did pretty well. We picked up a lot of molt migrant geese the last 10 days or so that have moved back. So goose abundance is pretty high. And, you know, even had some reports of some snow geese up in the far northwest this past weekend. So generally pretty favorable for geese, too.
Interesting.
How long you think they'll linger, Steve, if a guy wants to hunt over the next couple weeks?
I think things like teal and wood ducks are on their way out. You know, mallards and ringnecks. Ringnecks we should see in the next week. Really see a spike in abundance, I think, up in some of the rice lakes. The lakes are in very good shape. And geese, things like geese will continue to build, you know, all the way into even next year. I mean, we'll have goose, high goose numbers probably into December. So, you know, pretty long season and plenty of opportunity. And I guess we kind of hope Mother Nature cooperates a little bit and maybe a little more so than she did on the opener. But, you know, it actually kind of feels like duck weather now, at least up where I am in Bemidji, a little cooler and some rain, and that's pretty positive, I think.
We're chatting with Steve Kortz, the DNR's duck guru, I guess you would call him. Steve, typically now we go into the duck doldrums, so to speak, in Minnesota until we get more migration activity. Yep. I suspect that won't change.
No, and I think, you know, to some extent, that's how we've structured our seasons a little bit. And in the central and south zones, you know, they're open through this coming weekend, and then we take a split, 12-day split in the south zone and 5 in the central. And that's generally kind of the period of time that, you know, everyone kind of talks about the doldrums, but we're kind of waiting on migrant birds. But you know, I think even now or this weekend, we should still be holding teal and wood ducks and, you know, still some opportunity through this weekend. And then we'll shut down and kind of hope for some weather to push some migrant birds down.
My partner, Maxie, here, the poor guy, he has a habit of going out to hunt ducks in the peak of the doldrums.
Is that what the problem's been?
Yeah.
Ron always tells me, but about October 8th to the 10th is the best time to go, he says.
Well, Steve, thanks for now your job for the rest of the fall. You're going to kind of follow duck movements in the state, in and out?
Yep, and, you know, I produce a report every Thursday. We post on our webpage. It's kind of a compilation of different surveys and counts and manager reports from all over the state, usually posted Thursday afternoons, and it's pretty popular with hunters. It kind of gives them an idea, I think, of the, you know, how hunting has been, what habitat conditions are, and a little bit kind of the status of the migration and, you know, what's moved into the state. So that'll be up, keep me busy, I guess, until more or less freeze up, or, you know, late enough in the season when pretty much everyone has quit. So, you know, Thanksgiving time probably.
Well, we appreciate that, Steve. And we also, for folks who are wondering, you are a duck guy. I mean, you're in the duck blind as often as anybody can be. I know that.
Do you go up in the chopper at all to check them out?
No wing in the fall, but I haven't actually been up yet this year, but I'm hoping to. The weather hasn't been that cooperative, but I should be up pretty soon and kind of see the status of, you know, at least up in the northern part of the state, and it's pretty enjoyable counting ducks from an airplane anyway.
Sure. Well, let me know if we can ever go with do a story on that. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Now, I guess maybe I could put you on a better spot that way.
Well, it wouldn't hurt for me to do a little scouting, I think.
Yeah.
Steve, thank you so much.
You bet. No problem.
You bet. Steve Kortz, Talking Ducks. Did I ever tell you about the time I shot a duck?
Yeah, 5 years ago, I think.
Yeah, I've got the picture still.
Do you?
Yeah. Did you want me to sign it?
I can't wait to see it.
Did you want
again,
me to
see it? And again and again. I think we ought to take a break, buddy.
Okay, take a break. Come back. This is Live Outdoor.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Can't you see Ron Scherer walking into Northern Minnesota?
It's another
karaoke night one night, and they say, Ron,
I can do it,
a song.
I can do it. In fact, you know, our next guest is the infamous, or should say famous, Ron Lindner, but his fishing brother, Al. It's a little trivia bit. Al Lindner got married to a lovely lady named Mary, and guess who sang for their wedding?
John Denver.
Very close. He was Ron Denver, Sheriff.
You didn't? Boy, they really had a tight budget back then,
well,
didn't they?
Well, as I recall, they didn't pay me a dang thing, but I was honored to do so, and Ron Lindner joins us this evening. Good evening, Ron.
You were back to doing some ancient history.
Yeah.
Well, you overpaid if you didn't pay him a thing.
If you want some ancient history, about this time of the year, 50 years ago, about a half a century ago, I met Ron Scherer. That's a half a century ago. He was a new reporter at the Star Tribune. And he's coming along, and I got a hold of him, and I said, would you like to introduce a new product to the market? And he's hot and punished. He says, what is it? I said, it's a live bait, Rick. He says, I think I'll come up.
Yep.
And he did come up. By the way, they introduced the Lindy rig.
The Lindy rig is what you're about to find out about, huh?
Yeah,
it must have been a long time ago, because I signed you earlier. You said he was young. He said I had a reporter up there, a young, good-looking guy. And he was in good shape. And I said, well, I didn't know who that could be. And he said, no, it's Ron Scherer.
So that was that's a lot of history. Not only is he singing weddings, he helped me introduce a product to the market. So
that still stands the test of time, Ron.
We caught 18. Yeah. We caught 18 walleyes that day, Ron. I remember it well.
Yeah.
Out of Gull Lake.
That was after the turnover, and maybe that's it. You want to know something right now about the, it is now September, what is it, 24th, 5th, whatever it is?
Right.
There was a tournament on the lake Sunday. I went over to the, I talked to the guys at Fish, sort of one of my sometimes tournament partner was fishing. And he told me the lake was 65 degrees on the top. The weeds haven't died off yet. And the trees along shore, although they're starting to turn a little bit, we haven't had a frost here. Now, if you go back 50 years, you want to go back to when we were guiding, when we were guiding with Ron over there, the guiding was just about finished at this time. It was, we had maybe a couple of odd trips here and there.
Yeah, the tourists were gone. Yeah.
It was gone. It was over. They were putting the boats away. They're not even taking out docks anymore. A lot of the docks were gone. If you tried to go dock fishing at this time of the year, it'd be tough. They were gone. Something has changed. Now, I'm not going to fight climate change, but it has changed. It has changed the last 50. I've been on the water every year since, without fail. And I'm telling you, it's later in the year every year.
Well, what I wanted to ask you, Ron, is for anglers that don't have near the experience you have, how can an angler know when the turnover is happening or is underway? Is there water temperature? Is it the cloudiness of the water?
Do you got a turkey in your pocket, or are you just happy to see us? We can hear that on the air, buddy.
Can you really?
that's your phone.
It's an outdoor show, buddy. So it's a.
Well, I'm not going to.
How many times have we told him to put it on vibrate?
Talk about Ipsilimnians and hypolimnians, and that the water when it is 4 degrees centigrade. You know, I don't even know what centigrade is, but it is when the lake on the top starts hitting around 40, and I'm using that in its widest sense, starts sinking with the cold water on the bottom, which is 39-something, and the lake will homogenize. It just literally bubbles up and homogenizes. Takes about 3-4 days for that. And during that process, the lake generally gets pretty dirty. Even clean lakes get pretty dirty. You can see a lot of debris in the water. It bounces up a lot of stuff from the bottom. And during those days, fishing gets extremely tough. Extremely, extremely, extremely tough. And it's really easy to tell. You go out, and if you're, let's say you're, what Ron and I did years ago, let's say you went Lindy Riggin, walleye with Nyquist, you wouldn't catch anything. That's how you tell them get off the lake. Then it's turning over. But after she clears up and everything, it's some of the finest fishing of the year.
Well, what are those, they always said, well, the fish are putting on the feed bag, and then I've heard some biologists say, oh, that's a bunch of hooey. How do the fish react after the turnover? Because they could be at any depth and be comfortable, right?
Yeah, let me put it this way. Al and I take a certain amount. We don't guide anymore, but we sign up for charity trips where people bid. And if they win, they win trips with Al and I for various charities. And we got a bunch of them we do each year. Put it this way. Naturally, if you're taking out somebody that bid some decent bucks for you, you know, to go out, you don't go out on a test run. So we make sure when we got them out, I drive up, I could almost tell them, you cast out and get ready to set the hook because we're not taking you on game time. We always take them out after the turnover. So whether, I don't know what the biologists look like, we don't do any of those charity trips before we know where these fish are positioned. And we've got them after 50 years of filming and doing all this stuff. We got places that I can drive up with you and barring some real unforeseen circumstances, cast out, and I can cast out myself and almost set the hook. That's the kind of places we take these people. And it's over the years, 50, 60 years of playing on the water here, we've learned that, and I couldn't go do that during the summer. I think to try to do that, some places I could do it in the spring.
Interesting.
But but fall, that'd be a tough shot. But that's when we do it. That's when we take all our charity trips on. And for that reason, how are the fish biting? I have to say, better than ever.
Well, Ron, let's do this. Let's real quick answers here now. Walleyes, what's your fall approach? What bait do you use? Jig, minnow? What are you using?
Al would use a jig and wrap. I did something a week ago. My brother-in-law was up from Chicago. He is a absolute meat hound. A walleye, loves walleye. Called Dick Sternberg up, and I says, Dick, I want to make a meat run, something I haven't done in years. I mean, going out purposely to catch meat. I said, I don't need no big ones. I don't, none of that stuff. I says, what a good. So I went up. We went to Longville, Minnesota, and went on a nearby lake that he had there. We lindy-rigged night crawlers in 23 feet of water. And bingo, bango, bingo. We quit. We were out 3 hours. We quit. As it started to rain, we had, I don't know, 10 or 12, all kids, not countless ones. I mean, nice eaters, decent eaters, not giant eaters. Plus, we had 5 smallmouth bass that were ranged between 3 and 4 1/4 pounds. Now, this is without even trying. So, the walleye, now, on some lakes like Gull Lake, After the turnover, they will start dropping deeper and deeper and deeper. A lake's like Whitefish. They'll get deeper and deeper and deeper. The smallmouth bass on Mille Lacs will go out to those rocks out there, those 23, 24, 25-foot rocks. They had a tournament over the weekend where a guy weighed for 5 fish, weighed 28.6 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
For 5 fish. Now, that's... You got to scratch your head.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, that's better than the Bass Pros that were up there. They had an individual bigger bag than the Bass Pros that were up there the week before.
Was he fishing deep?
Yeah, he was all deep, yeah. Then what they do is they go out there in that water and they drop shop, you know. And naturally, it was all artificial. You can't see. He was in a tournament, so he fishing by the rules, you know.
What about largemouth bass after the turnover? Where do they go?
I like that. They will move out of the shell. I like it to the point when the shallows and the lily pads start curling up. And they will leave those lily pads, especially we've got so many small shallow lakes in Minnesota. I'm talking these things, 500 acres, you know, 600 acres, that are primarily largemouth bass lakes. That's what they are in panfish. And you get to those lakes, and they will drop off to these points. The weeds or rocks, the rock weed tips, or these break points, they will leave the shallows. Now, if you've got a lot of shallows, a lot of bulrushes, if they're in there all summer, you go out and find some places out there. And one of the places I tell you we take our trips, we got one place that I go. I have a tough time fishing it in summer, Ron. Taking people out, you know, trying to impress them, getting on you, paying money to take you out. But this lake I will go to in a heartbeat. It is lots of shallows, and I have a tough time in summer. But I'll tell you, it's one thing. Come fall, they come up, and they just line up on those weed lines, the deep weed lines.
Ron's been taking notes the whole time here. He just wants to know what lake to go to now, Ron Linder.
Well, Ron, we're about out of time here, but I got to make one more confession. I think I've already shared this with you, but this you mentioned first going out, and I was the first one to write about the Lindy Rig, the first one to write about Al and Ron Linder. But I remember something infamous I said. I looked at this little walking sinker that you invented. You had a little swivel there. You had a short piece of 24, 36-inch piece of monofilament leader, and you had a little hook. And you said, this is it, Ron. This is how you catch them. And I go, why would anybody buy this? You could make it yourself. And only a few million people bought it, Ron.
That is it.
Well, yeah, but at the last count thing, I think it was somewhere in the last 50 years, it's in the 50 millions.
Wow. Well, I was really wrong then.
If you offered him that piece of the action, he didn't take it. Now here he sits having to do a radio show with me on Monday nights to try to overcome.
Can I do a fast commercial? Do I have time for that?
Yeah, go right ahead.
We've got a thing called Fishing Careers Workshop coming. Go to mycatfish.com, just punch it in, and you're going to learn about the first time that we are going to assemble a bunch of people that if you love to fish and want to fish, we're going to show you how to break into these careers. And you want to go up mycatfish.com. Okay. Go there, look out on the web, and you might be surprised.
Well, and again, okay, there's no age limit on that because Ron was jotting it down again.
Well, I'm sorry.
Ron, thanks. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for giving us some time.
Okay, but my pleasure. Anytime, and next time you can have Al.
Very good. Well, you did well. Thank you.
Oh, all right.
There's a character, Ron.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, he still hits the water, and he's no puppy anymore.
The Minnesota Twins going to New York. Max Live Outdoors with Ron Shiro. Ron, a couple of interesting notes. The wolf population is up.
Oh, yeah. News today from DNR. They, every year do a little survey, and they say that Minnesota's wolf population is up a startling 25%.
25%?
Yeah, that's one-fourth more wolves this year than they found last year. And they attribute that to a bump in deer population because of mild winter, and so wolves apparently had enough food. Venison, and when they have good food, they reproduce. I guess that's how it goes.
I guess, yeah.
So they estimated the total is right around 2,800 wolves in the state, which is 3,000 wolves was the peak, highest a few years before that. So 2,800 to 3,000 is 200 wolves. I don't know. How accurate?
Give or take.
Give or take. So there you go. So
and you get a bear story.
Yeah, last night, I guess the driver hadn't found him, but somebody hit a black bear, about 200-pound black bear, in the Corcoran suburb.
Now, that ain't that far from the Twin Cities, buddy.
It's not very far from you either, is
no.
it? Well, you better walk
Buckle
around
up.
With it.
Well, I don't have to worry, it's dead, no.
But it was found, I don't know these roads, but it's Maple Hill Road and County Road 10.
So you know 10,
those?
That's in
Oka. I know. Well, that's Highway 10. This is County Road 10.
County Road 10, yeah, okay.
In Corcoran.
But you know the area.
Yeah, 200-pound black bear. So,
well, anyway. I mean, I know they're getting closer and closer, but.
Well, no big deal. I was turkey hunting by Taylor's Falls, which is not very far from the Twin Cities, and called in. I didn't call a black bear in. I was trying to call a turkey in, and I don't think the black bear was coming in because he thought he could – have a turkey dinner, but he just was ambling along while I was sitting by a tree, hunkered up with all kinds of camo, and the wind was right. But it's a little startling, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah. They're not small, are they?
No. But anyway, so we have bears close to the cities and wolves all over northern Minnesota. How about that?
And, you know, I got to tell you, the whole duck hunting thing, as much as I enjoyed duck hunting, I didn't go this last weekend, but when it is that warm, I have a tough time getting in the mood.
Yeah, I get that.
You know, I like today is a good day. It's cool, you know.
Right. I understand that perfectly. And you get the same thing if it's, too cold to go walleye fishing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, same idea, mood. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but we have a lot of great weather coming up. You and I were just talking off the air. Evan mentioned grouse hunting. Supposed to be good, but who knows yet? As far as I'm concerned, the leaf cover is too thick. But, you know, the grouse addicts, they've been out there now a couple weekends. They don't care.
One guy got lost in the woods. They had to bring him out. Now, they'd bring him out by helicopters, you know, and because he had on videotape, it became a big news story. But do you think in this day and age, I guess we've never done the reports on this, and I don't know what they compare it to, but with cell phones and GPSs, do we have far fewer people getting lost?
Well, he had a cell phone. That's why he was
But
they able-
died on him, right?
No.
He was able to tell them, but no, that died after that.
He called his wife and told her he was lost, and so then she alerted authorities. So I don't know if the phone died after that or not, but obviously it can't help you get out of the woods, so to speak. So That's a good question.
But it possibly could. I mean, if you've got reception, right, you could
maybe Google Maps.
You could ask for the where's the, I don't know.
Yeah, Google Maps and where's my location? I don't know. See, some of that, I'm too old to be that hip on iPhones and that.
Well, you got that turkey call on yours. Well, my gosh, that's pretty hip.
That is hip, but that's important. But to answer your question, yeah, I think iPhones, et cetera, have saved some lives.
Yeah.
Guys tipped over or in trouble in the woods or, you know, whatever, for sure. That's, you know, I'm trying to think of the incident. I did not. Oh, this summer, I'm fishing with my good friend Doc Epping, and we're out in his boat when suddenly the motor won't start anymore. It's a beautiful, you know, Mercury. Wouldn't start anymore. And what were we going to do? Well, I had my phone. He didn't. So I called a local guide who I knew had him, and he came and towed us to town. Well, then we had to call the mechanics, and so
but
we got.
The point is, the phone helped.
The phone helped. Yeah.
Okay. Have some good stories for us next week, Ron.
All right.
That concludes Live Outdoors.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.